"Our security situation won't change if we moved," Jenny told him, marveling at her own understatement. "Okay, I've got your coordinates. Use your TIP carbines to scorch a clearing at least 50 meters across. I'll need it for a landing zone." "Yes, sir." "I'm on my way." Jenny swapped her TIB carbine for Dean's Gauss gun. By sitting with her back to a tree, she could keep it pointed at Gerald Skibbo. The two G66 troops began slashing at the jungle with their TIP carbines. The captain of the Equon was a middle-aged woman in a blue shipsuit, with the kind of robust, lanky figure that suggested she was from a space-adapted Geneid family. The AV projector showed her floating 10 centimeters above the acceleration couch in her compact cabin. "How did you know we were leaving orbit?" she asked. Her voice was slightly distorted by a curious whistle that was coming through the relay from the LDC's geosynchronous communication platform. Graham Nicholson smiled thinly at her puzzled tone. He diverted his eyes from the projection for a second. On the other side of Durringham Spaceport's flight control center, Langley Bradburn rolled his eyes and turned back to his monitor console. "I have a contact to Makulu Embassy," Graham said, returning to the projection. "This isn't a commercial flight," the captain said, a fair amount of resentment bubbling into her voice. "I know." Graham had heard of the Kulu ambassador throwing his authority around and virtually commandeering the Kulu-registered colonist carrier, a situation which became even more interesting when he discovered from Langley that it was Cathal Fitzgerald who was in orbit, making sure the captain did as she was told. Cathal Fitzgerald was one of Ralph Hilch's people, and now, as Graham looked through the flight control center's window, he could see a queue of people standing on the nearby hangar apron, shoulders angled against the rain as they embarked on a passenger McBoeing BDA-9008. The entire embassy staff and dependents. "But it is only one memory fleck," he said winningly, "and the Time Universe office will pay a substantial bonus when you hand it in to them, I can assure you of that." "I haven't been told where we're going yet." "We have offices in every Confederation system, and it would be a personal favor," Graham emphasized. There was a pause as the captain worked out that she would receive the entire carriage fee herself. "Very well, Mr. Nicholson. Give it to the McBoeing pilot. I'll meet him when he docks." "Thank you, Captain. Pleasure doing business with you." "I thought you sent a fleck out with the Gemmel this morning," Langley observed, as Graham switched off the meter-high projection pillar. "I did, old boy, just covering my back." "Are people really going to be interested in a riot on Lalonde? Nobody even knows this planet even exists." "They will. Oh, indeed, they will." Rain slammed against the little space plane's fuselage as it dived out through the bottom of the clouds. It made a fast rattling sound against the tough, silico-lithium composite skin. Individual drops burst into streaks of steam vaporized by the friction heat of the craft's Mach 5 velocity. Looking over the pilot's shoulder, Ralph Hilch saw the jungle blurring past below. It was grey-green, sprinkled by flexuous strands of mist. Up ahead was a broad band of brighter grey where the clouds ended, and getting broader. 90 seconds, Kieran Sison, the pilot, shouted over the noise. A loud metallic whirring filled the small cabin as the wings began to swing forward. The space plane pitched up at a sharp angle, and the noise of the rain impacts increased until talking was impossible. Deceleration hit 3 Gs, forcing Ralph back into one of the cabin's 6 plastic seats. Sunlight burst into the cabin with a fast rainbow flash. The sound of the rain vanished. They leveled out as their speed dropped to subsonic. "We'll need a complete structure fatigue check after this," Kieran Sison complained. "Nobody flies supersonic through rain. Half the leading edges have abraded down to their safety margins." "Don't worry about it," Ralph told him. "It'll be paid for." He turned to check with Cathal Fitzgerald. Both of them were wearing the same model of olive-green one-piece anti-projectile suits as Jenny and the two G66 troops. It had been a long time since Ralph had dressed for combat. A cool tension was